We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome in, Hornets fans, to another BuzzBeat podcast. We are a proud member of the Blue Wire Network, and be sure to check out the website bluewirepods.com for more content. This is Richie, and I'll be joined as always by Spencer and Brian. Give us a follow on Twitter at Richie Randall, at QCH Spencer, and at BGeis_Bird. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the last two games of the road trip, and we'll probably get into some trade talk towards the end of the pod. But first, let's check in on the co-host, Spencer. How's everything going in the Percy household?
It's good, yeah. It's coming together. I'm actually sitting in my... So we have like a loft area as soon as you walk upstairs, and it's been nothing but like 80 million parts of a desk that needed to be put together for a while. And so I was missing a part. It finally came in last week, and I think that was a top five accomplishment of my life. Seriously, I've never like put together an entire piece of... you know, very advanced, it would seem advanced to me, furniture. And I put together this desk and I finished it on Monday night, and I was finished, and I like yelled at my wife. I like screamed for her to come upstairs and look. I was that excited. So I'm sitting at my new desk. So I think all is well, Richie. Thanks for asking.
That's awesome. Cause it's so funny. The roles in my household are reversed. My wife does like, she loves putting things together. Like she loves IKEA, can't stand IKEA. I feel like I do most of like the cleaning, so it feels like the roles are completely reversed in our household.
Usually that's certainly the case in our household too. I literally can't put anything together and never have really enjoyed it. And so when I finished this, yeah. I think I discovered a part about myself I didn't know existed. So it was fun.
Good. Yeah. I just don't like directions. So I that's why it takes me forever to do things. So anything new in your life, Brian? Any updates in the dating scene?
Oh God. No, to be quick there. Jesus. We don't have this is like a whole other podcast is me explaining my the traps that I fall into and the pitfalls and the No, I actually just put the kibosh on something that wasn't really going so well over the weekend, so that was a whole other thing. But so we got that going on, and then the other little bit of good news, as I was telling you guys before the pod started, was the HVAC in my house here in Raleigh decided to kick before a winter storm this weekend. So we were basically without heat at the house for Saturday and Sunday and Monday. So I was having to spend the night at my family in the area. So that was a fun thing to deal with, but now it's a balmy 66 degrees in the downstairs of my house here, which is wonderful. And last night it was working, so I was actually able to catch up on Hornets games and stuff. But super busy with ACC hoops right now. I always forget every year just like how how intense this gets. There's games every night to watch, to cover. I've been at a couple games at State. I've been in every Duke game so far this season. And a big game coming up this weekend with Virginia. I was there Monday night in a crazy evening with Trey Jones going down and full court shots and overtime and Zion Williamson doing crazy things and RJ Barrett missing a million shots. And But nah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's hard. I always forget every year how much of a it just makes keeping up with the Hornets a little bit more of a challenge. There's so much stuff to watch.
Well, it does make it more of a challenge, but it's also prep work in the same way.
Totally. No, we were watching the Hokies and the Wahoos last night, and I was explaining to my roommate Nikhil Alexander Walker, and I was like, this guy might be on the Hornets next year. Or DeAndre Hunter. I was like, these guys could totally be on the Hornets next season, you know?
Yeah, only a matter of time before we start bringing these names up, right? So Alexander Walker, haven't seen him a lot. Early impressions, and I know going against UVA's defense is tough. Not impressed, BG. Not impressed.
I like him. I like him. I'm not all the way on board, but I'm coming around on him this season.
Yeah, he's good size. Rest of his skill set, not psyched about. But anyways, we got plenty of time to talk about that when the Hornets land in the lottery once again.
Yep, and I've yet to watch an SMU game this year. But anyway, let's jump right.
Oh, that reminds me. I got to buy your flight. That reminds me.
All right, let's jump into this. We're going to recap the last two games that Charlotte has played. So on Saturday, Charlotte went into Sacramento on a back-to-back and a rest disadvantage and lost 104-97 to a Kings team that truly is, I feel like, is an underrated team among many fans. So if you were to look at the box score, though, a lot of Charlotte's stats were pretty fairly even with the Kings, but the biggest discrepancy was the turnover battle, and Charlotte wasted 18 possessions. You're not going to win many ball games when you turn the ball over 18 times. And also, Kemba, while not super efficient from behind the arc, dropped 31 points, and Batum added 13, and he was the second leading scorer. So there's a big gap there between Kemba and Batum, and then not a lot of other players stepped up in terms of just kind of contributing in the point department. The first person I want to talk about, I feel like I always lead off with Kemba. In this game, I felt like he did very well at the rim. In the 15 games leading up to this game, and not counting for the Spurs game, Kemba had been shooting close to 60% within 4 feet of the basket. So a very, very solid number. And this is kind of a part of his game that really never has been, you know, in his repertoire, hasn't really fully grown to what I thought it would be, because on the season he's shooting 53% within 4 feet, which is just, it's a number that's got to get up. And I know that we've talked about it in previous episodes, and just in terms of maybe he just looks for the call too often. I know that he's listed at, 6'1", but I doubt that he's really 6'1". So he's having to go up against more length. But the fact that he actually shot very, very well in the paint this game helped him out. And, you know, he didn't shoot too well from deep, but I think he did take advantage of a lot of times that Giles and Bagley dropped deep on the pick and roll, and he hit a couple of mid-range shots as well. So, you know, funny, Kings would even go big, and they'd be okay with switching with the big on Kemba. So that I thought that was interesting.
He switched everything.
Regardless of what the lineup was. So any thoughts on Kemba, or any just kind of thoughts on this game? I just kind of wanted to start it off with Kemba and his finishing at the rim, which has been better as of late.
The one thing that I noted about this game was the Hornets' urgency to get back defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about it. We've talked about it a lot this season, just their struggles in transition. I wrote about it last week on Queen City Hoops. I think playing a team like the Kings that force the ball down your throat so often and try to go really as fast as anybody in the league, you know, it just the attention to detail you have to have, right, to keep them out of transition. And Richie, especially to your point, we had 18 turnovers. Yeah. So to only allow 4 fast break points to Sacramento in this game says a lot about how locked in we were to take those opportunities away from the Kings. I mean, they had 9 chances at it. They only made 2 field goals, which is a little bit of an outlier if you look at it. But, I mean, you still have to give Charlotte some credit here, right? Like, they are locked in, and I think they know it's something that has to improve. They cannot continue to give up easy buckets. So I think this game came at a really good time for the Hornets. They didn't win, but, you know, I think transition defense is one of their biggest problems right now, and I think this game, having to play a team like the Kings, came at the right time to kind of get their attention reorganized to where it should be.
Yeah, Sacramento, they play at a pretty ridiculous pace. This game had 99 possessions in it, according to NBA.com. It's just not an insane amount. And just for a little bit of context, Sacramento, second in the NBA in seconds per offensive possession, 13.2 seconds. They lead the NBA in average possession length after an opponent turnover, 7.4 seconds. They're top four after a defensive rebound, top two after a made shot. I mean, this team, they go fast, man. But that night, Charlotte did a pretty good job on them. Sacramento, 15.1 seconds per offensive possession. So about two full seconds down from their overall season average that night. So that was a good – thought that was worth pointing out as a positive for the Hornets. As you said, this was, in terms of turnover rate, their worst 20% turnover rate, worst game of the season. So, you know, this game offensively, the big swing was – and it was interesting because they actually had more turnovers – in the first half than they did in the second half, but they were so much better offensively in the first 24 minutes, 1.11 points per possession in the first half, 54% effective shooting, under 0.8 of a point per possession in the second half, 39% effective shooting. A couple other thoughts offensively. I thought this was a really bad game for Jeremy Lamb. Look, Lamb's been awesome, and you can't the Hornets have gotten, it feels like, plenty of value over his contract this year. I think you can argue he's been the team's best player. Maybe he's obviously the team's second best player. This was just a weird game. Like, I thought he was just sort of, again, second night of a back-to-back long road trip, but just I thought he was like a little checked out. He had a couple just turnovers where I was like, man, this guy is just his head's not in the game, whether it's because he's actually fatigued or, you know, didn't, you know, who knows? It could be a million different reasons. But and I thought he had a nice bounce back game against San Antonio. But yeah, 3 of 8 shooting, only 1 3-point attempt in 26 minutes, 3 turnovers, only 3 free throw attempts. Like, it was just a weird game for him. And I really didn't think he played that well. As far as the young guys go, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about you know, another sort of like trick or treat performance from Malik Monk, 4 of 11 shooting, 2 of 6 on threes, but just some really tough shots, 0 of 3 on field goal attempts from 8 to 16 feet. And some of them were just like, you're just sort of flailing into the middle of the lane and throwing up some slop and hoping it goes in. And then Miles Bridges actually sort of fell for him this game because he just 1 of 6 shooting, 0 of 2 on threes. He just looked tired. There was even one of those plays where they ran, you know, Chicago action, the little like down screen into the handoff for Batum, and Bridges was on the weak side, and they run that play where they sort of like cross and he cuts through, and like that should be for Bridges, that should be like, I'm looking for the ball because it's time for me to get a dunk right yeah. now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, here comes Nick around the corner, like I'm cutting to the, and he just
stopped, I mean, right?
He just stopped. Yeah, and I mean, the pass hit him, but he was just not at all. It was a turnover. He just wasn't at all expecting the ball to come to him. And you know, I thought that was a little bit of a red flag. But then he bounced back and had a nice game against San Antonio too. I thought he was much more like engaged on both ends of the court. So yeah, I don't know. And then we should probably get into MKG here too. But what did you guys think about Monk guys, and Bridges, the young guys, and Devontae Graham too. We'll throw them out there as well.
I didn't make too big of a note on either Monk or Miles. Like nothing, like, you know, nothing stood out other than the fact that I thought Monk had a strong first quarter. I think overall, like you said, Brian, he did not have a good game, but he had a point in the first quarter where he scored 5 points fairly quickly, a 3 and a 2, obviously, and then he also had a nice pass to Billy. So you see these sparks from Monk that he does have.
Yeah.
He even had he had a nice off-ball steal, I believe, in the second quarter, you know, just to kind of show that awareness on the defensive end. It was almost like a cross-court bounce pass, and he stole it. And I think that's where he struggles the most is off ball on defense, and to see that happen. But again, putting it all together for the full 48 minutes, he's still not doing that. And I think that you'll see sparks here and there with Monk, same with Bridges, but getting that consistency down is key.
Yeah, going back to your Lamb point, BG, I think he looks a little – I would never describe him as an explosive basketball player.
Yeah.
To me, he's clearly lacking some explosiveness, you know, since that hamstring injury, and that should come to be expected. I mean, that's a real tricky injury. It can flare up out of nowhere. You know, his mid-range game is great. He knows where he wants to get to and where he can score from and eat from pretty consistently, you know, in that 10 to 14 feet range or whatever it is, but he's just not getting to the basket. He's not getting to that Euro step. He's not using the length with his arms to get right there to the rim. You know, like we did, I think, before that injury. Like, I need to actually go look at that number and see how many points he's actually gotten at the rim here on the West Coast trip. I don't think it's very many. So I think that has something to do with that. And then about the rookies, I mean, I think you make a good point about Miles and Monk. I mean, I think the end of the West Coast, their first West Coast road trip in the NBA, there's probably a little bit of I'm sure these guys are tired, right? I think it's probably taking it out of them. You know, we've talked about Miles' struggle for a while now. Really nice to see him break out of it in San Antonio. Here's what I'd like to know. I'd like to know what happened and if it was led by Kemba, Parker, Borrego. What happened between that Sacramento game? I had thrown the towel in for this team in San Antonio. I was like, we just got to get him back to Charlotte. And they were – I mean, seriously, go back if you have a chance. If you have that game DVR'd, go back and watch the pre-tip huddle of the Charlotte and San Antonio game. All five guys, they're like talking over each other. They wanted that game so badly, obviously, Tony Parker. But who really ignited the energy back into Charlotte? Because that defensive performance was excellent. I'm jumping ahead now, but it was super encouraging to see what I thought was a team that was just basically going to sleepwalk their way back to Charlotte, go to San Antonio and get that win. So I was surprised. I was about as surprised by that result as I've been in any Hornets game in a pretty long time.
Yeah, that especially after, you know, we've been playing on this West Coast trip. And I think, Brian, we should talk about MKG and just kind of his impact on this team. To. And I feel like it is a sneaky impact in terms of just he shows up on the court and you just can see it immediately in terms of the players around him and his play. I think the second quarter was probably his best quarter of this game. He played in a part of a lineup with Devontae, Monk, Jeremy Lamb, and Marvin at the five to start the second quarter. Mm-hmm. The numbers weren't that great with that lineup, but I thought he played especially well, even though the stats didn't kind of blow it out of the water. But he does a great job, and I don't know if the numbers back this up, but I feel he does a great job of getting the ball off a rebound and taking it coast to coast and scoring. I feel like he also had a made three-pointer in this game,
above the break.
Yeah.
No, he had one in both games. He went back to back-to-back threes.
Back-to-back. Look at that. Yeah. So in those 7.5 minutes, he scored 9 points, going perfect from the field, had a three. He continues to show a positive impact on the offensive boards. He's even boxing out bigger players like Bagley. He just adds that extra spark that not a lot of players on this team can add.
Yeah, and let's just look. Here's his line, because you got to go deeper into the box score to find the total impact from this guy. Because, you know, announcers during the game like to say, well, some of the stuff this guy does doesn't show up in the box score. And it's like, yeah, if you click that drop down arrow, you know, you can find a little bit more, actually. But 11 points, 7 rebounds, I think 3 were offensive, 3 blocks. He had an above-the-break 3, team-high 2 loose ball recoveries, 10 defensive box outs. I believe that was also team-high. And he contested 13 shots in this game. I mean, the dude was absolutely everywhere. And I swear, this is my own little metric I'm using to sort of like grade certain MKG performances by. In the NBA, some of the mics can pick up people, can catch guys saying and one.
Yeah. Get out. Is that what you're about to say? Yeah.
I love when the mics pick up Kemba and MKG saying and one when they attack. Like that, for whatever reason, they both have – Kemba turns real New York, and like the mic will catch him saying some words that, you know, probably don't want over FCC airwaves and stuff like that. But MKG has a perfect and one call. I'm not going to like try to impersonate it because I won't do it justice. Just the next time he plays, like listen for it. It's best. It's up there with Kemba and Draymond in terms of like my favorite and one screams in the entire NBA. But like that's how you know that like he's got the ball and he's attacking. And so that's just like he had probably 3 or 4 and one calls in the Sacramento game. And it was like that's like he's engaged offensively. He's involved. And he's not just settling for mid-range, you know, these open mid-range shots. Like he's putting the ball in the hoop and he's driving like a crazy person to the hoop.
Now, Brian, does that fall under the drop down? Can you find that on the drop down?
No, you cannot. No, you gotta talk. Yeah, that's proprietary information for me. All right, you gotta like talk to me about that if you want the secret sauce and one scream data.
It's impressive. I love listening to him talk on the defensive end. How many times he told Monk, and Monk did a good job in San Antonio of, you know, we doubled LA a lot, Aldridge, and Monk would have to come in on the weak side and kind of jump in front of the opposite postman, and when MKG would recover, I think in one play, he screamed at Monk like 7 or 8 times, get out. Yeah. Monk had been out for like 7 or 8 seconds, and he finally looked at it. It's a hilarious moment. He looks at MKG, he's like, I'm out. So, you know, it was pretty funny. But, I mean, MKG, it's why he's the heartbeat of the defense, right? Yeah. I mean, he communicates unlike anyone else on the floor. But, Brian, you're right. I think in the Sacramento game, how often he got to the rim was very encouraging. Sacramento, fifth worst team in the NBA at protecting the rim. And like you said, they switch a lot. You know, the driving lanes are pretty open against the Kings, right? So, you know, I thought MKG did a nice job of attacking and taking advantage of that, which we don't get to see as often as I think we'd like.
Before we wrap this game up real quickly, just want to say one quick note. Sacramento, fun team. Dude, De'Aaron Fox is going to be a problem for a really long time in the NBA.
Yeah.
His ability to just cause havoc on those 1-5 pick and rolls where you're not going to switch, he's going to at least get an angle to the hoop. And he's just got all the moves, man. The way he can manipulate the ball when he drives and protect it, and he's got great vision, decision-making skills are on there. He can hit step-back threes, pull-up threes. Like, that dude, if surrounded with the right pieces, is going to be awesome for the next 10 or 12 years. If I were a Kings fan, I would be bummed that I didn't have Luka Doncic too, but I would be very happy knowing that I have like souped up Mike Conley running my show for the next decade. I've watched him plenty this year. This was the most intensely I've watched him this season, and I was just blown away with his skills. I'm such a fan.
His quickness is just terrifying.
Yeah. Very, very shifty player. And you think of this guy as, you know, being a quick player, but he had this one play in the game where he was driving baseline. And it's almost like he was too far into the basket, and I didn't think he was going to make, you know, even go up for the shot. But yeah, he bodied whoever was guarding him and was able to even, I think, maybe get an and one in that situation. But
the little flip alley-oop he threw to Cauley Stein, he came off a pin down from Cauley Stein. He took like a dribble or two in the paint and then just lobbed it up. I mean, it was just like, God, dude, you are. I mean, Biombo, you know, he plays really hard, but just in space defensively, just like no hope.
Terrible matchup for Biombo. We're about to move on to what was a pretty good matchup for him.
Yeah, made it there we go.
All right, so before we transition to the Spurs game, I want to tell you guys about a promo that we got going on at Blue Wire. Like the rest of us, you probably made a New Year's resolution. If you're planning to eat better, exercise more, be more patient, kinder, or whatever, it all starts with a good night's rest. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and enter my promo code, COZY, and you'll get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. It's amazing what a difference a great pillow makes. If you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the 4-pack, shipping is absolutely free. That's right, no shipping cost. Zippo, zilch, nada. And don't forget about the 60-day money-back guarantee. There's nothing better than the gift of restorative sleep. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and use my code COZY to get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com or call 800-966-1472. And remember, my promo code can be used for any offer on MyPillow.com. Again, that's promo code COZY, C-O-Z-Y.
All right, well, before you get ready to go to bed with your pillow, or perhaps you could even use it to curl up on the couch to help you enjoy this next thing here. So look, I know you guys have heard plenty of stories about drug cartels. They're all over the news, all kinds of fictional TV shows, but the crime ring you've probably never heard of is one of the most dangerous in the world. They are the Mennonite mob. You heard that right. Mennonites. 99% of them are kind, God-fearing people, but there's one group that has smuggled millions of dollars of narcotics from Mexico to Canada. Wednesdays, starting January 23rd, so that's next week, at 10 Central, WGN America presents the new TV series Pure, based on the true events of the Mennonite mob. The show is about Noah Funk, the newly elected Mennonite pastor who is determined to rid his community of the drug cartel. But he finds himself way in over his head, and the good pastor, along with his wife, will do some very bad things, all in the name of protecting their family. Think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness meets Narcos. All right, I like those shows. Get hooked on Pure, Wednesday, starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central, only on WGN America. WGN America is available on DirecTV Channel 307. This channel 239, or check your local cable listings for the channel in your area.
All right, let's jump into the next game. Tony Parker makes his return to San Antonio. Didn't make the biggest impact, but he added 8 points and helped the Hornets cap off their six-game road trip with a 108-93 win. The Hornets out-rebounded the Spurs and made the most of their second-chance opportunities. Kemba, in my mind, did a complete 180 in terms of how he scored. He played much better outside the arc, converting 7 of 13 from deep than he did on the inside or inside the paint. So a completely different way in which he scored from the Sacramento game. And then also Jeremy Lamb pitched in 19 points and 7 rebounds. I'm again going to lead off with Kemba's play. I thought this was one of Kemba's better games recently, especially from deep. Like I mentioned, where he went 7 of 13. He also added 5 assists and only committed 1 turnover, which was, again, like I said, very different from the Sacramento game in which he committed like 6 or 7. And I made a note of this. Anytime that Kemba went to the bench, I felt like the Spurs kind of went on this mini run. And I had to kind of look that up, use that drop-down menu, as Brian would say. And every time that Kemba went to the bench, especially in the first quarter, we saw the Spurs, they did make a run. When he was on the court for the Hornets in the first quarter, the Hornets had a 38.9 net rating in terms of the offensive and defensive rating. When he went off those final 3 minutes, they had a negative 50 net rating. So again, this just speaks to his impact on the team. And you even saw late in the game in which LaMarcus Aldridge was coming to double him. So these teams key in on Kemba, and he's still able to get off his, you know, get up his points, get off his baskets, and play well. And I thought this was probably one of his better games in recent memory, probably in the past 5 or 6 games. This probably was his best one. And one more thing to note before kind of passing it off to you guys, I thought that guarding Aldridge was definitely a tough task. You know, he's a beast regardless of who's playing them, you know, in the post. I think Marvin had a chance at him a couple times, didn't do so well. But you know, it is what it is with LaMarcus. He's going to be very difficult to guard. And Borrego made the right move in my mind in playing Biombo late in this game. I think LaMarcus's offense suffered a little bit when Biombo was in that game, especially in that fourth quarter. So thoughts on the Spurs game and Tony Parker's return?
Well, I agree that this is one of Kemba's best games in some time. I mean, the Spurs just he's a bad matchup for them defensively. I mean, with DeJounte Murray out, you know, Derek White did an okay job. But, I mean, look, when Patty Mills or DeMar DeRozan or Bryn Forbes, and I think just a few possessions, had the chance to guard Kemba, like, those guys can go over the top all they want, but they're too small. DeRozan's not going to fight hard enough to get over a screen. And Kemba's going to get a lot of wide-open looks, you know, at the top of the key, off simple screens. And look, let's give Biz some credit. I thought he set some really, really good screens in this game. It says, I looked it up earlier, it says he only had 3 screen assists. It seemed like so many more to me in this game. Marvin actually had 6, 20 for the team, which is a good number. But yeah, I just think this, Kemba needed this very obviously. But I just think this is a terrible matchup for the Spurs. I don't think they really have an answer for him, you know, because on top of the fact what I already mentioned, they don't have any guards that are physical enough to get over screens, you know, and stay attached to him. They don't have any bigs that can come out and hedge hard. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge and Pirtle maybe, but Aldridge really is not – they're not going to bring him to the top of the key and ask him to do too much defensively. So, but nice to see Kemba kind of break out of a mini slump, I guess.
Yeah, this was a good win for the Hornets on the road against a team in San Antonio. The last, really, the last probably 15 games has been, was top in the league in net rating and was up in the top, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 for both offense and defense. So good win for the Hornets to get on the road to complete the battle. That was one of the best games they've actually had all season. But look, like you said, Richie, it starts with Kemba, almost literally. Like, he started this game off hot. He hit a 3 on Charlotte's first possession of the game, and he was cooking from that. And, Spencer, to your point with the Spurs being a bad matchup, I mean, they just sort of picked on Aldridge. I mean, it's like, look, LaMarcus, if you're going to get – you're going to put us in the blender and just crush us from 18 feet and in on that end of the court. Well, we're going to make – we're going to, like, hurt you on this end. Kemba, you know, he was 7 of 13 shooting threes in this game. He was 7 of 12 with Aldridge on the court shooting three-pointers in this game. With Kemba on the court and LaMarcus Aldridge on the court in this game, the Hornets right at 1.2 points per possession over 31 minutes against, again, a good defensive team. Not a great matchup, but a good defensive team. In terms of screen assists, Marvin 6, Hernan Gomez 5, MKG 4, Biz 3. Those 18 screen assists lead to 42 points. Not all that's Kemba. And Spencer, I agree with you. It felt like Biz should have had a few more in there too. But that's a lot of production against a very good defensive team that maybe in terms of wing defenders is sort of lacking with Murray out. You know, Lonnie Walker not really online as a thing yet. And yeah, I just thought Kemba. I mean, it was. You wish like he could just always have games like this where he can get to his spots and doesn't have to go. I mean, he didn't take a free throw in this game. He didn't have to. Like, he could just get to his pull up spots. He was 5 of 9 on pull up threes in this game. And yeah, it was just a really really impressive performance. You hold the Spurs to only 1 point per possession, and you go up, you know, 114 points per 100 possessions. I mean, it was just a great game for the Spurs, and I thought. When things got a little hairy, like late in the third quarter and early in or into the fourth quarter, like Kemba and Parker just made big play after big play. They hit a couple shots. Parker hit Marvin for a corner three when they absolutely needed it. And it was just a hell of a performance from Kemba once again.
And to your point about, you know, Tony Parker, he didn't really make the biggest of impacts on the game as a whole, but he did his usual thing in the fourth quarter. He only played 4 minutes in the fourth quarter to start that, but definitely weathered the storm. He scored 6 points, and obviously he scored it in the normal ways that he usually does, whether it's weaving to the mm-hmm. rim or hitting those occasional mid-range shots. You know, Tony Parker had his typical game with the Hornets. He probably wanted to play a little bit more then, you know, in his return. But I'm glad that Charlotte got the win and he was actually able to come on late in the game. I almost felt like Borrego wasn't going to put him on. Like, we saw, like, wasn't Biyombo, like, pushing him to the scorer's table? Or maybe yeah. Parker didn't even want to come on, but it didn't even seem like Borrego was going to put him on. But, you know, the bench kind of willed him onto the court.
The other thing, too, is, like, just Devontae Graham has just wedged his way into the rotation, too. Yeah. Like, he's just played too well to, he requires minutes now, yep. And you know that's going to come at the sacrifice of Tony Parker.
That
you know
full court
I mean?
Pass was something. By
the way, just was gorgeous, just absolutely
beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And for that second unit to come on and really play right with San Antonio after Charlotte's good start was very encouraging. I thought it really kept the game at bay, which the second unit has struggled at so far this season. But I mean, this was an effort game for the Hornets. I thought defensively they were good. Mm-hmm. I think San Antonio is about, they're getting there when it comes to like least creative offense in the league, but they don't have to be real creative. They'll take a lot of mid-range shot because they make a lot of them. They don't take many threes per game, but they make the most in the league percentage-wise. You know, so like they know where they're going to eat. And they don't mix it up beyond that very much. Look, LaMarcus Aldridge had a nice game stats-wise, 28 points, 11 of 17 from the floor. But Biz did a nice job in terms of being physical with him and in terms of making those post-ups take some time, right?
Yeah.
Like, almost just slow the game down. LaMarcus hit a lot of step-backs, you know, but it felt like a lot of these post-ups took 6-7 seconds to really develop, and I think that played into Charlotte's advantage. This team seems to kind of respond a little bit better and get a little bit more confidence, especially on the defensive end, when they can force teams in that last, you know, 4 to 8 seconds of the shot clock, which they haven't been great at this season. So mm-hmm. I thought this was just a huge game for the defense. They also cleaned up the glass. They beat up San Antonio on the glass. Only 3 offensive rebounds for the Spurs, who don't go after offensive rebounds very often. But I just still thought, like, Aldridge has some chances. MKG had some huge box outs on him. Batum was in there fighting in this game for rebounds. Lamb had 7 big ones. And look, when a guy like Jeremy Lamb grabs 7 rebounds, that's going to open up the grab-and-go opportunities, which gives Charlotte easy baskets. So this was one of those games where I thought Charlotte really maxed out their effort, and they were able to get easy points out of that.
It was good to see Miles Bridges, too. I thought, again, you know, 4 or 5, basically everything close to the rim. That little right-handed finish that he had around the elbow off a pass from, you know, he beat a closeout off a pass from Graham, got to a spot, and that little touch. I mean, like, you can just see the parts of the skill set. You know, I don't think we're going to get to all of it this season, but you can see the framework of a really nice piece going forward. But he had a nice closeout. Like, Bertan still scored. I think it was in the first quarter. Bertan still scored, but like, Bridges was right with him, closed out well on his feet, contested the mid-range pull-up. Like, and then late in the game, he and Marvin, I think he was matched up with Mills, and Marvin was on one of the big guys. It was probably Aldridge and not Gasol, but like they navigated the switch perfectly. And it just, it was one of those things. It's like, I don't know if that's even an auto switch play, because Mills is a mismatch guy, but they handled it. And that's something that I think Miles has struggled with at times this year. And so that was promising to see. Devontae Graham only took two shots. He missed both of them. They're both threes, but he had four assists. Quick note here on Devontae Graham for the season: 56 assists, 14 turnovers, 6.5 assists per 36 minutes to 1.7 turnovers per 36 minutes, 25% assist rate, which is a nice number, to only a 12% turnover rate. And two last things on this real quickly. I'll slip these in here. MKG hits another corner three. He's now 7 of 16 on corner threes this year. He's 2 of 5 from above the break, too. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if he can just increase the volume next season. Like, that might be the thing that he – because, like, all of a sudden, man, with all this other cool stuff he can do on the court, like, if he becomes a guy that can get up a couple per game, I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, and I should probably chill out. But, like, if he could just notch up the volume a little bit, man, it would be – it'd be really interesting to see. And then once again, Willie Aaron and Gomez, just, he had a nice game, had some really nice pick and roll finishes, had a really nice dunk off a feed from Graham. But San Antonio, man, 1.3 points per possession with Willie on the court for 13 minutes. And I swear to God, that like play where Derek White crossed him over, and like Willie just literally just lurched out at him, and White was like, "This is the easiest crossover I've ever hit since I got to the NBA," and just right by him, and White hit Pirtle for a layup at the hoop. But it was just like, it was a laughably bad defensive possession for Aaron and Gomez. Like, I think he was playing hard, like everyone else was that night. But boy, in terms of just like how he locks in, his footwork, all that stuff, like he's just miles from being anything close to like a semi reliable defensive center. Again, it was sort of hilarious to see, and again, not surprising to note that like San Antonio basically lit Charlotte up when he was on the court.
Yeah, fourth quarter, just real quick for me, closing time, as Eric Collins would say, zero turnovers for the Hornets in the fourth. Zero turnovers for Charlotte in the fourth quarter. Really, really impressive. Not sure they've done that all season. Uh-huh. And then I just, can we just take a minute and tip our caps to Bismack Biyombo? Like, seriously, yes. I know that I've been gone out of my way. I'll throw my body in front of a bus right now to just point out how good this guy has been in the minutes he's been given. But stepping up to the free throw line and helping ice this game. Charlotte didn't take that many free throws in this game, 9 to my count. Is that right? Yeah, anyways, I need to go back and look at that. But Biz stepping up late in this game and really helping ice the game. One last request. Can Jeremy Lamb, Malik Monk, Kemba Walker, every now and then, can we stop trying to throw Bismack Biyombo pocket passes? For the love of God, please.
Oh, God, dude.
Like, just stop. If you're going to throw it up to the rim. And look, if he doesn't get it, that's fine. He's going to smack it off the glass or he's going to miss it off the rim. I'd rather live with that turnover than this pocket pass turnover garbage. He's not going to catch the pass. Okay. Stop throwing it to him.
Yeah.
Stop.
That fourth quarter with zero turnovers was just the second time this season the Hornets have had a zero turnover fourth quarter. The other time was the day after Christmas loss at Brooklyn, which, if you remember, was a pretty frustrating game for the Hornets too. But yeah, it's the second time with a better result this time against San Antonio.
Okay, I think that we've been holding off on this for a couple episodes, but I think it's inevitable. We need to start talking about trade possibilities, players, teams, and what the Hornets should do before 3 p.m. on February 7th. I just want to open it up with this question, and then you guys can start throwing out topics that you guys want to talk about when it comes to trade. I don't think they will trade Kemba by any means, but do either of you think that's a possibility?
0%.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I say, especially with the All-Star game coming there.
That's true.
And my answer wasn't this like a month ago, but I think I think Charlotte's mindset went from we're going to come home 5 games under 500 to winning in San Antonio. I think they it's just a guess.
Yeah.
But I think it completely pivoted. I think they're solidly, unless they come home and lose to Sac and Phoenix at home, they're solidly in buyer territory here.
Yeah, I just think I agreed. I think they're all in. I mean, everyone who's around, who's following the team or watching this, everyone knows they're all in on making the playoffs, and that they have a clear interest in bringing Kemba back this summer. I think that's what we're going to see happen. The only tough part is, you know, everyone wants to say, well, how do you build the team around him? Well, it's basically impossible to do anything outside of small stuff on the margins until 2020. Uh-huh. So, I mean, can you sit out and waste, you know, yet maybe another year, the final year of his prime or whatever? There are no real alternatives. I think there's a slight chance. Like, let's say there's 3 weeks here before the deadline. It's tough to look around and be like, well, what superstars could be had right now? Do you know what I mean? There just aren't, you know, you hear the stuff with maybe Gasol and Memphis, and it looks like they could very well end up being sellers. But, you know, he's a big center. That's a little tougher to fit into a picture. Like, Kemba's a sweet shooting point guard that can create his own shot. Like, he plays for anybody, you know what I mean? You know, Jimmy Butler's already been moved. We're not going to see Kawhi being moved. It's just, if there were a team that were trying to swing a big trade and get a superstar, like, for the second year in a row, he might be the best guy out there. You're certainly one of the best guys out there. But, I mean, like, dude, I'm at, like, you know, just above – I'm saying slightly, you know, non-zero chance, but basically just above, you know, right above zero, you know, somewhere in that, like, 0 to 5% range, you know?
There are so many teams a Kemba trade makes sense for. I mean, you can start with New York is the obvious one for obvious reasons. You know, look at Milwaukee. Could they upgrade the Bledsoe position? Yes. I mean, Phoenix needs a point guard. I mean, I don't know why they would trade for Kemba right now, but who knows what Phoenix is going to do ever. I mean, look at all these playoff contenders that could try to get in the mix. I just had another one in my mind. Now it slipped. But so I think they're fielding tons and tons and tons of calls and will continue to do so. But how in the world could Charlotte, how could they explain to their fan base that traded this guy after this huge marketing campaign with him on every poster with the All-Star game approaching? And then this story that very obviously the Hornets helped Bleacher Report write about Kemba, you know, in L.A. earlier in the week, you know, this puff story about Charlotte and how good of a guy he is, which he is a great guy. I totally believe that. But this is obviously orchestrated by somebody within the organization with Bleacher Report. And, I mean, how could they then pivot and trade Kemba Walker? I mean, unless they're just pulling some Jedi stuff here, which they're not, there's no path to him being moved.
And I'm not saying that I think Kemba's going to be traded, but I also feel like as fans, we shouldn't be expecting some kind of major shakeup. And, you know, and to escape this 6-10 seed range anytime soon, like Brian says, not until 2020, we're not going to escape that. A major shakeup has to occur. And by keeping Kemba, you're not really going to be, I guess, progressing in the standings all that much. And, you know, we talked about this last episode with Rod Boone, just our makeup and our salaries, it's going to be very hard to trade someone on our team and get anything back of, like, great value. So I'm not saying that we have to trade Kemba, but I also know that we're probably going to be stuck on this path of mediocrity for the next couple of seasons, barring something very fortunate in the draft.
Yeah, oh, I remember the other one I had on my mind a second ago, and it's actually my favorite what-if Kemba trade. So what if the Clippers called Charlotte and said, we'll give you Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and your choice of, I don't know, look at four or five players and expiring contracts on this roster. And you know what? We'll throw in an unprotected pick this year since we're probably going to be in the playoffs. Or maybe they could make it top 20 protected, right? So okay.
You'd have to do it.
Right. I mean, I feel like a deal like that is probably out there for the Hornets because there are so many buyers in the market. And a team like the Clippers, like, they'd love to get Kim in there now, make a playoff run, you know, court Kawhi this summer, bring Kemba back, which I think they could do within their cap. Like, you can go down the list and look at just such attractive Kemba trades because of his low cap hit. But I just don't think they're going to do it. Anyways, we can talk about stuff that actually has a chance to happen, Richie.
Yeah. Do you have any names or possibilities or anything that you're thinking about when it comes to this trade deadline come February 7th?
Well, maybe somewhere we should start. I mean, Mark Stein tweeted earlier this week, and this is not a shock to anybody. The Hawks need to start losing, right? They're winning a lot recently, and I think it even surprises them. But Dwayne Dedmon, Dwayne Dedmon, Jeremy Lin, and Kent Bazemore all available. According to Stein, for the right deal. Greg Petras, who used to write for Queen City Hoops, tweeted this the other day. Charlotte could use any of these guys. Like, these are all holes that need to be plugged for the Hornets. They need center depth. They need a wing who can guard multiple positions. So, you know, Devontae Graham doesn't have to keep squeezing his way into the rotation here. And they need point guard help, you know? So any of these guys could help. It's hard to see with Bazemore's number, you know, how it works to get him to Charlotte. I mean, Bazemore's making 18 this year. Next season, he's got a player option for 19. I've seen somebody throw out a situation where, you know, can we switch him in Batum's contract and throw him something else? I have a request. Can we stop trying to move Batum's contract? It's not going to happen. Let's just stop. It's not going to happen.
It's
just stop
it.
Real quick, just to throw out the numbers, and then you go, BG Lynn on an expiring 13.7, and then Dedmon also on expiring 7.2 this year. So those are very attractive contracts. It's hard to find, like, what Charlotte's sending back.
Exactly.
It makes sense for a team like Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta wants picks. So if we're going to send, like, I mean, we're already short on second-round picks. So, I mean, if we add, you know, a young player, you know, and then a few picks, I mean, we have nothing to trade.
It's just hard
to see a deal that's going to get us into these conversations.
Yeah, like, Lamb is sort of like this one swing chip, but, like, if you're not going to get, like, equal return back for him, you know what I mean? And he's too important. Like, you need him. So if you're going to make this keep making this playoff push so you can get swept by Toronto in the first round, but, like, you need Lamb to get you to that finish line. Dedmon for a while has made sense to me as a possibility, just because they need center depth. He gives them a rim running five. You know, Viz has been, I guess, serviceable for the Hornets recently, but, like, he'd be soaking up these minutes for them with Cody out right now. You know what I mean? Or you wouldn't need to play Willie, Aaron, and Gomez. Like, you could put him back to the third spot and let, you know, Dedmon and Zeller, when he gets healthy, let those guys handle. I mean, we're probably, 2 or 4 weeks away from Cody being healthy. That makes a lot of sense. Bazemore just feels like that salary is just too big. Like, it's just – and I feel like Atlanta's got bigger fish to fry when it comes to, like, moving that piece, because – teams are looking for wing depth, and he's sort of like one of the guys that can be had. You know what I mean?
I think with Bazemore, just because of that number, like, there's some clear dead money on that contract. How much of dead money there is, I think, is up for debate. But, like, a Bazemore swap with a few second round picks, or maybe one. Like, it's hard to get a feel for what Bazemore's market's going to be with that cap hit the next few years.
My thought is, like, there are other contenders. There's a team like Houston out there. You know, they'd have to move Eric Gordon to make this happen. But, like, that are so desperate, and, you know, Gordon's been pretty awful this season, that would just, like, they're so desperate to go get a piece because their window to win now is literally now, and it's not going to exist in 25 months. So I just feel like there's better stuff to be had for them to move for him. Not like Kent Bazemore's this amazing player, but he's at a position of need. And teams are just trying to stockpile, you know, 3-and-D wings and guys that play with energy and stuff like that. I don't think this will happen, because I don't think the Clippers are, like, at all trying to have any interest parting ways with SGA. But, like, Pat Beverly on an expiring and SGA for Kemba, like, that works. You know what I mean? But, like, I don't think that's happening. But their starting lineup with Gilgeous Alexander is actually, like, overall in terms of net rating has not been great. And, I mean, Kemba plus, you know, Harris and Montrezl Harrell, I mean, and Gallinari, I mean, they would be a tough – I mean, that'd be a hell of a three-point team with Harrell, you know, rim-running and stuff like that too. Gortat, another really good screen setter out there. But, like, I don't think that's happening. But Beverly does make a little bit of sense, just because, you know, he's expiring, and you can match the salaries with those two guys too. So, those would be my two thoughts on just the sort of the moves we're discussing right now here.
It's just very difficult to kind of think of a trade. Like, once when you kind of pinpoint someone on the opposing team, it's hard to think about who is outgoing on the Hornets. Like you said, Lamb is one of the biggest names that comes up. But we talked about this on last episode. There's not going to be someone who immediately impacts your team this season for his salary. And one name I do want to throw out there, because I thought I saw it floating around on Twitter. It'd be kind of funny to see, but Noah Vonleh. Back with the Hornets, guys.
Yeah, we got, dude, he's been good, man.
I think he's on a expiring contract. So, again, going to be tough to get. And it's funny, his agent actually is Jeff Schwartz, who also happens to represent Monk, Kemba, Zeller, and I believe Lamb, which I think is interesting. Yeah. I don't know how agents play a role in terms of that type of situation, but it's interesting to see that Jeff Schwartz shares, you know, agents with like four players on the Hornets.
They can certainly help. Yeah, Vonleh is dirt cheap. I mean, New York's got an incredible value. $1.5 million. He's got only a tiny cap hold of $1.62 million after, you know, after the season, too. I mean, he's been – what a buy low bargain find. And the guy's made himself some money going into a big free agency summer, too.
Here's a deal I think makes a little bit of sense for Charlotte is – and. You know, I kind of go back and forth on where I think Courtney Lee is at this point in his career. But if you think that a Courtney Lee, Jeremy Lamb swap to get New York off that contract, which they badly want to do and open up some cap space this summer, and then, you know, to make it work, you know, throw in Frank Kaminsky, you can have his restricted rights. And if he plays well at the end of the season, when you're trying to tank to get Zion, then so be it. You guys have a negotiation. That trade works. I think it barely keeps Charlotte under the tax. And if you think a Jeremy Lamb, Courtney Lee swap actually makes you more versatile on the floor, which I would argue that it does in Charlotte's case, then I think that a deal like that is probably worth taking a look at. And not only that, but if you know, the Hornets are throwing back New York two expirings, mm-hmm. and getting them off that extra year of Lee's deal, they can also get a pick back.
How many more years? Would. How many more years for Lee after this? Because I know his contract's not the greatest. Do we know?
One more. I think it was a 40-year in 2016.
Yeah, so one more year. This, to me, is probably the most realistic trade in the Hornets' wheelhouse. We don't – you know, Lee's been hurt, but he's also – he's also on a roster that's trying to lose. So, you know, there's just always – there's always mud in the water with those kind of situations. So I think this guy can help somebody. I think he can help Charlotte, and they might as well just take on his money and keep it on the books into next season, because their cap situation doesn't look any better next summer anyways. Right. So like, there's no reason for them to get off significant money. If they can help somebody else, possibly help themselves on the floor this year and also get a pick back, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just depressing to hear out loud, you know? Yeah, well. I like Courtney Lee a lot. I'd push back again. Like you said, the waters are a little bit muddy. He's only played like, you know, a dozen games or whatever this year. I'd push back a little bit on it making them more versatile, just because I think Lamb, his ability to go get his own shot, again, you know, a lot of times it's these like floaters that aren't that great, is just so like, it's just so important. It's tough to think of them putting more on Tony Parker's plate. Maybe Devontae Graham helps a little bit there, but now all of a sudden you're counting a lot for shot creation from a 6'2" rookie, and you'd basically be putting more on Monk and Bridges, and like, I just don't know right now if those guys are there. But
yeah, I really think it would help Charlotte on the defensive end.
It would, no doubt, which they need. I mean, like, Charlotte is not a good defensive basketball team.
And Jeremy Lamb's just an overrated defensive player, I think, because of his length and stuff. I mean, Lee would help them there, and we've seen what, assuming he's healthy. Again, I'm just under the assumption this guy can play basketball this season. We've seen him knock down shots for this franchise in the playoffs in huge situations. Yeah. I think this is something they can take seriously.
Hey, maybe if they threw in Vonleh, if the salary still matched, I might be more for it. But I'm sure we'll be talking about trade stuff as the February 7th trade deadline approaches. We're going to go ahead and wrap. Thanks again for listening. We appreciate all the support and continue to give our episodes a retweet. It definitely goes a long way in getting more ears on our podcast. Also, get in on that giveaway for the BuzzBeat Kemba shirt. It ends Sunday the 20th, and we'll announce it the 21st. So if you want a free t-shirt, it doesn't hurt to at least try to get your name into that raffle. For Spencer, for Brian, I am Richie. Have a good one, and we will see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.